Hello again, everyone. This is Michael McCurdy, co-founder of TestyMom.com, an NYC gifted and talented parent expert. And tonight, we will be answering all your many questions that we've received over the past week or so. And I would like to introduce the other co-founder of TestyMom.com, the Testy Mom herself, and best-selling author, Karen Quinn. Hi, Karen. How are you?
I'm fine. How's everybody tonight? Hope you're all doing well and you're not too cold.
Yeah, if you're in the north. Yeah, Karen's in Miami, so not pretty envious of her tonight for those of in the New York City and northeast area. If you're everyone, I have everyone on mute mode, so if you have a specific question, all you have to do to unmute yourself is *6, and you can chime in if you have questions during the next probably 30 to 40 minutes or so. Again, you can do *6 if you have any questions, and it'll unmute you. And then after you ask your question, I can mute you back. So we'll go ahead and get started. We have a lot of great questions that we're going to be addressing tonight. And Karen, this first question's for you. It's about private schools.
Okay.
The first question we have tonight is, the private schools we are applying to have school visits where kids are separated from parents and kept for an hour or so play date. What happens during these so-called play dates? Can we prepare?
Okay. Well, it doesn't even matter where you are, because every private school does these play dates kind of their own way. And there's all kinds of things that could happen during one of these play dates. But what they're essentially doing is, this is the school's chance to take a look at the kids and really assess them for themselves. You know, they've gotten, with private schools, they've gotten applications, they've seen your test scores, they've probably met the parents, and now this is a chance to really see the children. And so what they'll do is just a number of things. That they might bring in a group of kids. It's very often it's a group of kids, maybe 6 or 8 kids, and they'll have a number of teachers there while the kids are being evaluated during their play date. And they might first have them do some different activities. They might separate kids, take 2 away for 10 or 15 minutes at a time and do a little bit of testing with the kids themselves. Like maybe, depending on what's important to the school, they might be looking to see, do they know their letters? Do they know their numbers? They might actually administer a particular kind of test that teachers are able to administer. Maybe some sort of a group activity. They might read a story and ask the kids questions about what happened in the story. They will have a snack time, and they'll see how the kids interact during snack time, if they clean up, that sort of thing. So it's really just a chance for them to both meet the kids one-on-one and also see how they interact with each other and possibly test them. And I would say it's very hard to prepare, because you just never know what's going to happen, because schools do this so differently from school to school. But what I will say, I know this is going to sound kind of strange, but when you send your kids to these play dates, I know this is going to sound so weird, but I've been helping a school, actually, that's been evaluating kids. And one of the things I've noticed that the teachers notice is how cute the kids are dressed, or if they're wearing something kind of memorable. So when you send them in something that might help the teachers remember the kids, whether it's, a really cute little, if it's a girl, a really cute little dress, just dress them in a way that just will help the teachers kind of remember who they are. And often they'll take pictures of the kids also while they're there, so that'll help them remember them. But the outfits that they're wearing might help them be a little bit more memorable, and you want that, because, when they're sitting around and talking about, well, which kids are we going to take, you want them to remember who your child is. And I just noticed that what kids were wearing helped the teachers remember who the kids are.
And again, that's for private school admissions. Mm-hmm. That's not for gifted and talented.
No. Not at all. Not at all.
So you're not graded on your dress.
Well, it's not that you're graded on that. It's just, I know it just sounds kind of strange, but I just noticed that, teachers were referring to kids by, remember the one in the red sweater, and so I just thought, oh, okay, well, that's a nice little tip. Just make sure they wear something the teacher can remember.
Okay, great. The next one here, while we're going to be talking about the OLSAT, we have several questions here pertaining to private schools, but we also have a lot of questions tonight pertaining to the OLSAT, gifted and talented test. Also, the OLSAT's not only pertaining here to New York City, but it's also given at many school districts around the United States for gifted and talented testing as well. The question here is about the OLSAT curve and scoring on the OLSAT. So the question here is, how many questions can a pre-K child get wrong and still score 90% on that test? The answer to that is 5 questions. So at that point, the child can miss up to 5 questions and still score 90% or above on the OLSAT Bracken test, and that was specifically here for New York City.
Michael, will you remind everybody how many OLSAT questions there are?
Sure. Thank you, Karen. I always
have it ingrained in
my head, and that's like I say it so much, I always naturally assume everyone else knows the answers,
right.
And no pun intended. For the OLSAT, to give everyone a frame of reference, if your child's in pre-K, which is usually around the 4-year-old age, the child will be given, it'll be 128 questions. So 88 of those questions are Bracken, and then the other 40 questions are the OLSAT. For the upper grades, it will be actually 148 questions, so kindergarten or above, 88 of the Bracken, and 60 are OLSAT. The Bracken is usually administered as the first part of the test, especially for a pre-care. It's kind of a warm-up to the OLSAT, because the Bracken actually can build your child's confidence as they take the test, because it's usually concepts that most 4-year-olds have been exposed to in some form or another. Shapes, colors, sizes. There are some 3-dimensional objects on the Bracken that you need to be aware of, like a cone, a pyramid. They need to say cube, not box or square. There are some other shapes that most 4-year-olds may not have ever heard of, like a trapezoid as an example. So these are concepts that you need to be working on with your child. And as you know, at testingmom.com, we send the daily emails that help reinforce that and really help promote that so the child gets the identity of what's a trapezoid when I see one, or, you know, what is a trapezoid? Because most 4-year-olds haven't been exposed to the word. And a lot of it is just exposing your child to these concepts to make sure they're comfortable with it. Karen, did you have anything to add to that?
I just want to clarify. So they can miss 5 out of all of those questions, or 5 out of just the OLSAT?
It would
be 5. In the top 90%.
It would be 5 out of all of them.
Okay.
Yeah. It's my understanding from our testing expert that I asked this question to.
Okay.
The next question here is, Karen, this one is directed towards you. It says, my daughter just fell apart at one of her private school interviews. And actually, this could be applicable if your child is actually going to GNT as well, just to get the comfort level, if they're going to testing. My daughter just fell apart at one of her private school interviews. She cried and refused to separate from us. She wouldn't go into the interview room without us there, even though this is for kindergarten. We explained to the director that she is very, very shy, and she likes to take her time to warm up, but once she's comfortable, she does very well. The director said that if she couldn't do the interview, they couldn't consider her. What should we do?
Well, okay, this obviously took place in New York. I just want to say, and I happen to know because I did talk to this parent, but a little bit about it. But, you know, in a city where there are many, many more kids trying to get into a school than there are, you know, than there are places, a school can have a policy like that where they say, you know, if you can't do the interview, I'm sorry, we can't consider your child, which is, I think, very, very harsh, especially considering, you know, there are kids who are very shy and they're great kids, but, you know, they may not be very comfortable walking in and going, separating from their parents and going into a classroom. And my suggestion in a situation like this is, if possible, to try to set up another visit and to try it again, if possible, to try to talk to the child afterwards and help the child feel a little more comfortable about exactly what's going to happen. And I would just try it again to see if maybe a second time she would feel differently, she might be able to separate. The other thing you could do is you could have your nursery school contact the the ongoing school, the kindergarten, and see if they could get someone from the kindergarten private school to come visit in the nursery school and evaluate the child in a setting where she's more comfortable. Some schools will do that. And so I would always ask, and maybe ask your kindergarten director to make that call for you, or nursery school director to make that call for you, because you know, they can talk and say, look, this is a child who does really well in school. Once she's comfortable, she has lots of friends. You know, she works really well, and you know, she's great at a number of things, and she's writing or whatever it is. They can give a nice you know, a description of the things your child can do, and they can suggest that the school come and see your child in a more comfortable setting. And in private schools, they might actually do that. And if they won't do that, and if they won't, if they do say that, you know, if your child can't make it through the interview, then we can't consider your child, then I would also suggest that, you know, that might not be the right school for that very, very shy child, if the school is that tough about the whole issue. So, you know, it's it when you think about if you're in a situation like this and you're talking about public school and gifted programs and you have a child who won't separate and go with the proctor for whatever reason, then that child is not going to be considered for the gifted program because they can't be tested. And so that's why, to the best, you know, of your ability, in the public school situation too, you want to try to get a child ready before you go to testing. Let them know what's going to happen. Try to make them feel as comfortable as you can, and hope that they will go ahead and go with the special teacher, you know, to do the special test. So, you know, to the extent you can prepare a child, you want to do that without freaking them out. You just want to make them as comfortable as possible. But if they can't take the test, they can't be considered for those programs. Michael, did you want to add anything?
Well, maybe we could just touch on if you have a shy child who's mm-hmm. going to be taking the gifted and talented test. I don't know if you have any tips for parents on that one.
For a very shy child? Well, it's really interesting, you know, that you should say that. I'm actually interviewing an expert on shyness tomorrow for my radio show, and I was going to ask him that question. So what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to take notes, and then at our next interview, next time we have a teleseminar, I'm going to tell you what he says, because he's an expert in shyness. But I will say that, you know, what we've been talking to parents about in terms of this sort of thing is, you know, try to, first of all, ahead of time, you know, tell your child that, you know, you are going to be going with a special teacher, just like Mrs. So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so at your school, and they're going to ask you everything that four-year-olds know, and you just tell them everything four-year-olds know, because you know everything that four-year-olds know. You're four. And so you want to talk to them about that ahead of time and explain that to them so that they're not surprised when you take them. You might want to walk by the school where the gifted and talented testing is going to take place, so that the child has actually seen it before you take them there to be tested. You know, say, this is where we're going to go for the special, you know, visit with the special teacher that we've talked about. And you also want to try, and if you have some time, you know, to the extent you can help your child be comfortable with safe adults, like, you know, maybe waiters. When you're out to dinner, if you can have your child order what she wants herself, talk to the waiter herself, or to talk to a storekeeper herself with you there. You know, you want to try to start to get your child a little comfortable talking to a grown-up, because that's what she's going to have to do with a proctor. And so those are some things you can do ahead of time to try to help her prepare for that moment when that's going to happen. And if I find out anything new from this expert in shyness, I will let you know. We'll definitely talk about that, because I am asking him this very question.
Thank you, Karen. And again, if you have any questions, we have everyone on mute, but if you have a specific question, feel free to chime in anytime. You can press *6 on your phone, and you can ask your question, and we have several people on the phone tonight, so please don't be shy. If you have any questions at all, just press *6, or you can email us at help@testymom.com, and I will get to you that way as well. I think we have somebody who unmuted themselves. Do we have a question?
Yes, I did. Hi. I had a question with regard to the gifted and talented test. You know, it says on certain of the practice tests that, you know, you have online that nothing can, that things can't be repeated. Can nothing be repeated? Do they only get, you know, one chance at listening to an answer? And if that is the case, what's the best way to prepare the children for that?
Well, yeah, the proctor just cannot redirect the child for the question. So the proctor will actually read the test proctor. That's the person who gets the test. The test proctor will read the question to the child. And then if the child doesn't know the answer or is having trouble, you know, listening, the test proctor, in most cases, they cannot repeat the question, but what they'll usually do is like, well, can you tell me what you think it is? Will you point to the one you think it is? And ask those questions along those lines as well. So the test proctor will actually, you know, say that throughout the process. One thing that we really encourage parents to do during any type of exercises that you work on with your child for any type of test preparation, what you really want to do is make sure your child is listening to the question, is staying focused, and is actually, you know, listening closely. And, you know, I would recommend also talking slowly at first to the child and reading the, you know, as you're reading the questions. And then as you're building up, I actually have your child maybe repeat some of the questions as well. What you really want to do is focus in on the listening skills that your child, is it a listening issue or are they not grasping the concept on the test? So if it's a matrix question as an example or an analogy question and your child points to the wrong answer, was it that he or she wasn't listening or they don't understand the concept? Those are two different things that you need to address right there. So the main thing is to figure out, okay, is my child a good listener? If they're a good listener and they can sit still, you know, how can I really instill in them that how important it is to listen to the question? You know, the proctors aren't going to speed read through these tests. The proctors aren't there to trick the child. The proctors are there to make sure your child actually performs at their best. You know, I haven't heard any, we are in touch with parents since the test date has started here in New York City. It started January 8th. And we haven't heard any, I've been in contact with hundreds of parents, literally. And we have not heard any issues of parents thinking the test proctor, you know, read the questions too fast or their child didn't have a fair chance or anything like that. The test proctors really want the children, they want the best to come out of the children during these tests as well. So you have to take that into consideration as well. They're not there to trick the child or make sure, you know, see how hard it can be for the child. They're there to make sure the child performs at their best. So one of the things we really tell parents to really focus in on, is it a listening issue or is it a concept issue? They don't understand the concept. Karen,
just,
did you have anything
to
add?
I was just going to say, just, you know, and do practice listening and just tell your child now, you know, whenever I ask a question, you've got to put on your listening ears and listen real carefully, okay? And, you know, make a big deal of listening carefully. And you can do that, you know, not every single time, but, you know, just to really get that idea of listen so carefully because you're not going to be able to say it again. So, you know, just like Michael said, you know, make sure you're practicing both. Does my child know the answer? And is my child listening? And practicing those listening skills. And I do think if you, in some of your practice questions, like he said, if you have them repeat the question, then you know they've listened. So that will be helpful as well.
Does anyone else have any questions from the audience? We have several more we're going to address here, but I'm going to put everyone on mute. If you have any questions, again, you can press *6. Okay, Karen, are you there?
Mm-hmm, I am.
Oh, okay. Okay, hold on just a second. I just wanted to make sure everybody was on mute.
Unless they want to unmute themselves.
Yeah, unless you want to unmute yourself, that's *6.
Then you don't.
Yeah, I heard somebody talking about, I think someone was putting their child down to bed. Okay, let's see here. Karen, this one is you had an interview today on your radio show this week. Actually, Dr. Kim Haar, who's a testing expert, and did she give you any insights about testing that you'd like to share with our listeners tonight?
Yeah, well, I have to tell you that's a planted question because I wanted to answer it. Totally planted. But I do want to tell everyone that if you would like, if you go to webtalkradio.net and you go to shows and then you go down the list of shows, there's a show called The 30-Minute Mom, and that's me, where I interview different people in all kinds of subjects related to being a good parent. And I just happened to this week interview Dr. Kim Haar, who is the head of early childhood education at Aristotle Circle. And one of the questions that I asked her, I thought was just her answer was very interesting, and I wanted to pass it on to you. And the question I asked is, I said, you know, what is the biggest mistake you see children make when they're being tested that if parents knew their kids were making that mistake, they might be able to help them avoid it? And so what she said was that in the testing room, often when kids are unsure about the answer to a question, they often just say, I don't know, and they won't even guess. And so what she said is, you know, if you give no answer or if you give an incorrect answer, the score is the same. So you may as well encourage your kids to make their best guess all the time. So when you're practicing, if your child doesn't know, one thing you want to do is you want to encourage them, well, what's your very best guess? And this isn't something she said, this is something I just want to add that what you can do is when you're talking through a question with them, you know, help them eliminate the answers that are definitely not the right answer. So maybe they're guessing between two answers instead of four answers. But that's one thing you want to do, because she says, you know, kids are just not answering, and if their parents knew that when they practice, they might have encouraged them to guess. The other thing that she said, and I thought this was really, really interesting, you know, she said that testers are not allowed to give feedback as to whether or not a child is right. You know, it's kind of hard for a child to be asked all these questions, and instead of the tester going, that's right, that's good, the child's not getting any signal really from the tester that they're doing it right. And so she said often they'll infer that they're getting it wrong, and their confidence starts to go down. And so her suggestion was that you should get them used to getting the kind of feedback at home that they're going to get from a proctor. So rather than always saying every time they answer a question, that's right, that's good, because they're not going to get that in the testing room, you might, you know, give them feedback like, good job, you're really trying hard, or I can see you, you know, you really thought about that before you answered it, but not saying all the time, that was right, good job, because they are not going to get that. And you don't want that to trip them up when they're actually getting tested.
Right, you really want to try. Yeah, that's great. That's really great advice from Dr. Haar. Thank
mm-hmm.
you, Karen. Anything
yeah.
else did she say?
No, no. I mean, she said a lot of stuff. So I just as a reminder for parents, if you go to webtalkradio.net, go to shows, and then the 30-Minute Mom, you can listen to my whole 30-minute conversation with Dr. Haar where we talk about testing. And she does give a lot of more advice about testing and how to help your kids do well, and so there's a lot more there on the show. Again, webtalkradio.net, shows, the 30-Minute Mom, and you can listen.
Yeah, I mean, I know for me, especially with, like, my daughter, it's like I really kind of overdo it sometimes. I'm like, yes, good job.
Yeah,
you know,
and you don't want to do that because you're not going to get that when they're really tested.
Yeah, so that's really, really good insights that mm-hmm. all parents should take into consideration if they're going through the testing process. Let's see here. The next question here is, the questions from testingmom.com are very good and are helping me with my daughter a lot. We are trying to maximize our practice time before she takes the test this weekend. Do you have any other advice for us on how to help her do better when tested?
Let me take that. I just want to say about that, you know, I know we have a lot of parents who it's getting close to testing time, and they're really trying to get lots and lots of questions in before their child is tested. And what I would say is, you know, it is important to practice the questions, but, you know, try to keep it fun, try to keep it light, and, you know, you don't want to, like, make your child sick of the questions before they go in to take the test, because you want it to be interesting for them and you want it to be challenging and fun for them when they actually go in to take the test. And the other thing I just want to say is something that's very, very important is the night before your child is tested, and really maybe in the 2 days before the child is tested, make sure they get their full night's sleep. That's very, very important. There's actually a lot of research out there that if kids miss an hour of sleep, and then they go in and they take an achievement test the next day, they test a full grade level below where they are and where they would normally test if they're just missing an hour of sleep. So not getting sleep can really impact your child's score and their attention level and just their ability to focus. So it's just really important to keep that in mind, that it's probably as important or more important than even, you know, doing, trying to cram in a lot of practice, you know, which we don't recommend at the last minute. You know, just do the questions, keep it light, keep it fun, and get a good night's sleep the night, maybe the two nights before your child is tested, because you don't want them to be tired.
Right, and you don't really want to, like, change the routine either, you know, right before the test. If there's some, you know, if they go to bed at a certain time, now is not the time to change that at all. And I know a lot of these tests are done on the weekend, so kids may stay up later on the weekend, et cetera, so try not to do that, especially if you're taking the test over the weekend period. Let's see, the next question here.
Hey, Michael?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi, Karen. It's
Hi.
Mel. Do you mind if I have a question that
sure.
I'd like to ask, if that's okay? It's actually a four-part question, and my son is in the category of the woman you just mentioned. He's going to be taking his test this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been and he's testing for kindergarten. So I've been trying to get him used to marking the answer with a pencil, but I wanted to clarify that it's okay for this test that he points to it, because it takes him a little more time to mark it with a pencil than it does for him to point at it. And he takes a little bit of time with each question. So we've been trying to take the test in blocks of 12 or 16 questions, and there's a time that's supposedly allocated for each block of questions. And I wanted to find out, A, is it okay for him to point to questions rather than to mark it with a pencil? Number two, how strict are they with the time it takes for each child to finish each question? The third part was, I don't really understand how, if it's a 120 question test, how if they only miss five, they get 90%. Does that mean that it's not just the number of questions they get right that factors in the percentage, but the bell curve of how other children do with the number of questions they get right? And the final part of the question is, when do we get results, and does that come in the mail or via email? And sorry to throw so much on you like that, but.
No, let me address those, and, you know, if I accidentally miss one, chime in and let me know which one I missed. So your son is in pre-K going into kindergarten, or is in kindergarten now?
Well, he's in pre-K, and he's testing for kindergarten.
He's going into kindergarten next year, yeah. He will not be required to do any writing a pencil at all. All he has to do is point to the answer.
Good, okay.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about that at all. All he'll have to do, as far as the timing of the test, that your child will have as much time as it takes. They're, you know, at 4 years old, from what I've heard, it's like children can be in there anywhere from 40 minutes up to an hour and a half. So there is really no, at 4 years old, the test proctors, there's a lot of leeway there. They're not going to expect a four-year-old. If your child actually needs to go on a potty break, they can go on a potty break. You know, that's totally doable. So they do not expect the child to finish in, like, you know, 50 minutes is up and the child needs to finish the test. At 4 years old, you know, they're going to be a little distracted. They may need a break or here and there. So at 4 years old, there's no time constraint. They're not going to be, you know, timing him. Okay, next question. There's no rush at all. So you don't have to worry about that at all. I've heard parents, you know, their child's been out, you know, in 35, 40 minutes, and other parents, they say it's been an hour and a half and their child took two potty breaks. So it really depends. So you have no thing there. As far as, like, the bell curve, yeah, it's based upon how your child does in comparison to other children in his age bracket. So that's the way the scoring is done as well.
Okay.
And then what was your
The results.
No, the test results.
Results.
Yeah, the test results. The test results, okay, so your child will be taking it in February. Test results come out all at once. So usually, and this has been historically, it's at by the end of April, early May. You will usually get it if you signed up. Did you sign up your son online to take this test or not?
Yes.
You should get the results. I think they changed it last year. All the results are administered online, and you also get a paper copy in the mail as well. But you should be notified in email telling you what the results are, and then you'll log into your ARIS. Are you in New York City?
Yes, New York City.
Yeah, you'll be logged into your it's called the ARIS account here in New York City through the DOE. So you'll be logged in through your ARIS account through the New York City Department of Education, and then you can get the test results that way. I believe they're sent through there now as well as regular mail. So as soon as they're launched, the DOE will say, like after the test is, everyone has taken the test, which is like, I believe the March 8th is the last test here in New York City. They'll announce, okay, we're expecting the test results, you know, last week of April, first week of May. Historically, this may not be the case this year, but it is the DOE. Historically, they'll say a date and it's usually postponed 1 week or 2 weeks after. So whatever date they announce, just kind of take it with a grain of salt that it probably will be a week or two late. And in some cases, like we got the results when my daughter took the test a couple of years ago, we got the results of the test because they were 2 weeks late getting us the results. And then some of the school tours were literally the next day, and that was the last day you could tour that school. So we had like 100 parents show up at the school. The principal didn't know anybody was going to show up because he didn't know the test results came out. He showed up and he was kind of like surprised. So you kind of have to take it in stride. And just to give everyone a heads up, when these test results come out and when your children are accepted to the GNT program, if you're here in New York City in particular, what will happen is you have a small window of time. You have approximately 2 weeks to go tour all of these schools. If you're in a district that has a lot of GNT programs, you can expect to take off work because this is going to be – it's a chore, it's a challenge to try to tour all these schools within a two-week period if you hold a job. So what I really recommend parents doing, and everybody, you can do this now, if you live in a certain district, I would go to the particular schools that you may be interested in, even if you don't know the scores yet, and tour those schools. Many schools in the New York City area have monthly tours, and they're not necessarily – so during the monthly tours of the schools, you can actually go. You can actually, in most cases, you may be the only parent or parents there touring the school at that time, and it may give you a better indication of the school and what's happening at the school. I highly, highly recommend all parents do that, especially if you live in a district that has many GNT programs, especially if you're in like a District 2, which has at least 10 different programs here in District 2. So you could go to all these different schools, tour them prior, and then you could narrow down your list to your top two or three choices for when you get the test results. So, I mean, I know, you may be making a lot of assumptions that your child's going to be doing well, but in the long run, it'll actually save you a lot of time and energy and effort, and that way you're not crammed in this two-week period to rush and to visit all these schools, and then you're like, okay, what school did this and what school did that? You know, it just becomes – it's like visiting, you know, 8 different colleges within a two-week period, and you're trying to, like, gather all this information. And, you know, and Karen and I will continue to have these teleseminars throughout the school tours because in my personal experience, that's actually, believe it or not, more stressful than the testing. Not to scare any parents here, but when you get the results and the decisions have to be made, it's – extremely stressful, and at that time you will definitely want Karen or myself to answer all your many questions, because I had 100 times more questions after I got the test results prior to when my daughter actually took the test.
Yeah, and I just want to say, if you're not in the New York area, to the extent you can tour schools now before you ultimately have to make a decision, that the same rule applies. Find out. I mean, I know it's different all over the country. Some districts do have tours now, some don't, but at least call and see, and if you can look at schools ahead of time, it certainly helps, and, you know, to have done that and thought about it and been able to talk to parents who have kids at different schools before you have to make the decision. It's very nice if you can do a little bit of that work ahead of time.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Have another question here, and again, if you have any questions, please feel free to chime in. You can unmute yourself at *6. And did someone just unmute themselves who has a question?
Yes, I have a question here. My daughter is giving, she's going to first grade and she's in kindergarten right now. My question was, would she be, asked some oral questions, like you've been saying, they're asked to point out and say if it's a trapezoid or a cuboid or, like, you know, things like that? Or would it be just like, you know, marking on the paper where the teacher would give a question like to 5-6 students sitting in the classroom and then, you know, they just have to mark their paper?
Yeah, and if she's already – is it a public pre-K?
Yeah, she's in a public.
I'm sorry, a public kindergarten. If she's in public kindergarten, it's administered.
Yes.
It's administered in small groups. So the test, if your child is already in a public kindergarten or first grade or second grade, the OLSAT-Bracken test is actually administered in small groups of 3 to 5 students. And I have heard, and it really depends on the school. I've heard from several parents over the last couple of months. In some cases where their child was in kindergarten or first grade, they actually took the Bracken on a different day, and then they took the OLSAT like 2 days later, and the Bracken was given as one-on-one, and the OLSAT was given in a small group. And then from other parents, I've heard that their children who were in first grade or in kindergarten in a public setting were given the OLSAT and Bracken all at once. It really depends on the school and how they're actually administering the GNT testing in the school, and that's specifically for New York. Now, if you're outside New York, you should check with your teacher who's going to be administering the test or the school authorities where you're at to see how the test is actually going to be administered. If it's during school hours, who is actually going to be administering the test? Will it be actually your child's teacher, or will it be a stranger from outside your child has never met? Especially if they're younger, you want to make sure, to Karen's point earlier, how to get your child comfortable talking to strangers, and Karen gave some great tips there. Does that answer your question?
It's kind of like I am in New York City area, so, and I know like this, there is a teacher in the school who would be administering the test. So my concerns were mostly like, you know, would they be asked to say things, or it would be just they have to write on paper?
No, they just have to write on paper. They just have to fill in the bubble.
Color the, yeah, or fill the thing. Okay.
Yeah, your child will not have to read.
They will not have to, like, say what it is, for example, a trapezoid or, like, you know, as I said earlier, a pyramid or a cone. And do they have, like, a time frame in which the teacher is supposed to finish the entire test? Because 148 questions sound a lot of questions, you know. It's like, I don't know, I mean, for these kids to be able to finish them, it's probably an hour long or something like that.
Yeah, it does. It does take a while, and I think that's why some schools, depending on the school where your child's at, may administer the Bracken separately from the OLSAT. Keep in mind that the bulk of the questions are from the Bracken piece, which is 88 questions. And the 88 questions, it sounds like a lot of questions, but a lot of these are very fast questions, if you will. So they'll say, a lot of these are general knowledge questions, and the first 20 questions are very simple questions, and then they get progressively harder through the Bracken. But these are questions a child can get through relatively easily. The 88 questions, it's been my experience and what I'm hearing from parents, usually takes anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes to get through the 88 questions. And then the other 40 to 60 questions on the OLSAT, depending on the age of the child, would take the additional 40 minutes to an hour.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Karen, did you have anything to add to that?
Nope. I thought you did good. That was a good answer.
Thank you. All right. Let's see here. And we have a go ahead.
Kevin, it's actually a very quick question. It's a question from your list, actually. How do I build my child's test stamina for any test that takes over an hour? I don't know if you answered that question.
Oh, yeah, we actually, Karen, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I do. I just want to ask, you can't hear my dog barking in the background, can you?
Yes, we can.
You can. I'm sorry, everybody. I can't. My dog is barking. I apologize for that. I'd go put him out, but I'm going to answer this question, and then I'll go put him out. I'm so sorry. Okay. anyway, so building test stamina. What you can do is when you have questions, you know, practice questions, what you first want to do is kind of get a threshold for, how long your child can go, you know, and answer questions. You want to build it up. So maybe the first time you sit down with him, you know, just take some of our questions, take maybe 20 or 40 questions and, go through them question by question. And just when he starts to get tired or stops paying attention, then maybe stop. And then the next day you want to go back again. And this time try to build him up. Like if the first day he could do 10 minutes, the next day you want to try for 15. And then, you know, the next day you want to, you know, keep going, you know, try for 20. And if you happen, if you, let's say you're going along and let's say, you know, he did 15 minutes one day and the next day he's just into it and he can go to 30 minutes or 40 minutes, go to 40 minutes. I mean, let him keep going if you can keep him interested in the questions. And keep it fun. I mean, don't make it so that, you know, it's hard and terrible and it's, you know, it feels like, you know, hard, punitive school. You want to make it fun and light and a really, you know, interesting experience for him and engage him. And the more engaged he is, the better he's going to do, the more he's going to pay attention. And you just build it up a little bit at a time till you're going for at least an hour. And you don't have to only do test questions. You can, you know, what you want to, what you're really trying to do is you're trying to build his ability to sit still and focus on something for an hour. So, you know, one day instead of doing test questions, you might play a game that he likes to play and really keep him into it, keep him engaged for over an hour. But you build up to it. You can't expect that the first time you sit down, he's going to be able to focus for that long. So that's what
yeah.
I would say. Anything else, Michael?
Yeah, it's just usually what we hear from parents is, and this is a general blanket statement. So most parents, you know, attention, you know, boys are usually a little more fidgety than girls in most
yeah.
cases, not all cases as well, of course. But in most cases, you know, boys may be a little more fidgety, may have a little more struggle sitting still, staying focused for a longer period of time. So like Karen said, it's not only just sitting with your child, whether they're a boy or a girl, you know, practicing these concepts, but it's also doing other activities like maybe a board game or a card game where they have to like stay focused for at least a certain amount of period of time to help build them up, to help build up the focus. And that's one of the biggest challenges, especially when they're testing these four-year-olds. It's like the test stamina is just like so critical and so crucial to the success of this test because mm-hmm. a lot of this is just it's the listening skills that the child needs. And if the child's fidgety and they're moving and they're not paying attention, they're most likely not listening, which will have a dramatic, dramatic impact on their score. One thing we also have heard from parents is my child scored well on the Bracken. This was from last year, but then they bombed the OLSAT. Keep in mind the Bracken is the warm-up piece of the test. So if your child does extremely well on the Bracken and then just does poorly on the OLSAT, keep in mind that your child, those were the first part, that was the first part of the test. So one thing to keep in mind is that's when your child was fresh. You know, they were zipping through these questions and, you know, they were building up the confidence. But then by the time they get to the Bracken, you know, these four-year-olds have answered 88 questions for 15
to 20.
You
mean the OLSAT, right?
Yeah, well, the Bracken is the 88 questions. But then, by the time they get to the OLSAT, they could have been, you know, by that time, you know, they've been sitting there for 15, 20, 25 minutes, and then they start getting into the more difficult questions. So the test stamina really comes into play after the 15 to 20 minute threshold. So you really want to focus on that. You know, it's like you have to get your child, you know, most kids and what we hear from parents from last year was their children did extremely well in the Bracken. They got a 99%, and then all of a sudden they're getting a 66 on the OLSAT. And so the parents are like, why is there this big disconnect? And usually it's a matter of test stamina at that point. And that's what we really kind of focus on parents, give them the strategies to help them with that. One of the last questions here, Karen, and again, if you have any questions, press *6 on your phone and you will be unmuted and we can field your question. But the last question here is, what do I do with my child after the test period is over before we get the results? So I guess the waiting period. Karen, did you want to talk about that?
Well, I would say a couple of things about that. You know, even though that – my dog again, I'm so sorry. You know, even though you've if your child has enjoyed doing the practice questions, you know, we keep sending them to you every day, I would say to keep at it, keep practicing them, not only because you don't know how your child's going to score when they're tested – and it might be that, you know, that they come really, really close, but they don't get in to a program. So next year you're going to want to have them retested. So this is one of those things that if they keep practicing, they get better at it. And, you know, you might have 2 or 3 months of practice between now and the time, you know, that the scores come out. And you can really improve their skills just by doing a little bit at a time every single day. Plus, all of these things are things that will get a child ready for school. So it's the same kind of thinking skills they're going to need when they're in kindergarten, first grade, second grade. I mean, these are, you know, so you want to build these so that when they go into the next year, no matter where they go to school, you want them to do well. And one of the things I think we're going to do after the testing period ends is, especially for children going from pre-K to kindergarten, is we're going to start to put out some exercises and activities for you to do with your kids that will be, you know, one of the first things that happens when kids start school is there's a different kind of evaluation that takes place in the classroom where kids are, you know, they're sort of academic abilities are assessed, you know, whether, you know, where are they at writing letters, where are they at writing numbers, recognizing letters, that kind of thing. And so there's these academic skills that you want to make sure that sort of that they're ready for when school starts, because they place the kids in ability groups, the slow group, the average group, and the advanced groups, you know, if they don't get into the gifted programs. And you want to make sure that your child will go into an advanced group or at least the middle group. You never want your child in the slow group, because those often become self-fulfilling prophecies for kids. So we'll give you activities to start doing that are just fun and getting ready for just the academic skills that kids are going to need at school.
Yeah, and that's a good segue, Karen, now may be a good time to announce our parent workshop series that we're going to be having in New York. So Karen and I have been working with we will send you all the details of this information via email, so you don't need to really take notes. I'll be sending out a flyer to everyone. But starting February, which is February today, believe it or not, time flies, we're going to be having it's going to be located here in New York City, and we're going to be having
in New
a month.
York, yeah.
If you're, in New York.
Outside of New York, but if you're in
New
York.
Yeah, unfortunately, we are going to be filming it, though, so somehow.
That's great.
I don't know logistically if it's going to be on YouTube or it's going to be somewhere on our website, but we'll let everybody know. We're going to be having a workshop series, parents workshop series, it's called the PAL, P-A-L acronym, so it's Parents of Accelerated Learners Workshop Series, starting in February. February 15th is the first session, and we'll have a monthly series February through June. And we'll send you all the details out. And as a testingmom.com top member, this workshop series is actually free to you. And we have a panel of experts that are unbelievable. I'll be sending you all the details. Karen's actually going to be flying in from Miami for one of these workshops. I'll be attending all of these workshops, so I get to meet all of you in person as well. And we'll have experts from a variety of fields coming here, speaking to parents over this workshop series over February, March, April, May, and June. And then we'll relaunch the series again starting in September once school starts again. So we're really excited. We've been planning this for the last month or so, and we're excited to let all our testingmom.com members have complimentary workshop access, since you are a loyal member to testingmom.com as one of our top members. So I'll be sending out, or Karen and I will be sending out the workshop series information. I would highly recommend it if you can attend. It will be held in Manhattan, the Downtown Community Center, which is in Tribeca, which is near Warren and West Side Highway, and it's near the Whole Foods in Tribeca, if you know where that is. And it's near all the major subway lines. So even if you live in one of the outer boroughs, it's pretty convenient to get to, because all the major subway lines are within, you know, a 3 to 7 minute walk from there. And again, we really appreciate everyone attending tonight. Does anyone have any other questions? If you do, please press *6 on your phone, and we can address those questions now. Okay. Karen, it doesn't look like we have any more questions this evening. We've had a lot of people are on the phone tonight. So we really appreciate everyone calling in and taking time out of their busy schedule. And if you have other specific questions that you would like Karen and I to address, please email us at help@testingmom.com, and we will respond to your email as quickly as possible. And again, we appreciate everyone.
And Michael,
being
you're putting more questions out this week, right? You're going to put out some more questions, right?
More questions.
I know.
Yes, Karen. Karen has been, as everyone knows, Karen has been like literally hard at work. At least you're in Miami, you know, you're in my warm weather. So, been hard at work over the last almost a month now writing these questions, and so she's insisting that all our top members get more questions. So all our top 1% and 5%, you will be getting more questions in the next day or so. I'll be posting those on the website, and we'll make sure you have access to them. So everyone, and again, if you didn't get the emails, or to have a chance to read the emails we posted, matrix questions and also analogy questions over the last week as well. So we have those on the site. We highly, highly recommend you work on the matrix questions with your children. Those are usually the most complex concepts if your child is taking the LSAT, and also the analogies as well. So we'll be posting more. We'll let you know via email. And Karen, did you have any closing words?
No, I just, keep up with the work you're doing with your kids. You're all doing a great job. I know it's a little stressful. And, you know, just do the best you can. That's all you can do. We're going to think good thoughts for all your kids and hope that they all get into the programs you want them to get into.
Yeah, best of luck to everyone on the test. And I know a lot of tests are coming up over the next week or two. And, again, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to Karen or myself. We're more than happy to help you out in any way we can. Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.